Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Tuesday, September 19, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Sierra Leonean President Biol discusses his second-term visions despite opposition rejection of his re-election.
What I want to do for the second term is to consolidate the gains of the past 5 years.
Congolese can travel to Kenya and Tanzania visa-free. Italy's government passes measures to build new detention centers for Tunisian migrants. Sudanese activists condemned attacks on public buildings. More members of the Moroccan diaspora join in earthquake relief effort.
We started off with 1,000 meals a day, and now we're ramping up into 50,000 meals per day. And we're really talking about sandwiches, but also hot food, just to provide a sense of dignity.
And a Malawi church is closed over refusal of polio vaccine. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Sierra Leonean President Julius Maada Bio says he plans to consolidate and expand on the successes of his first term in his second term. In an exclusive interview with VOA, President Bio outlined the achievements of his first term, including free primary education for all citizens. He adds that his government has recently launched a mechanized agricultural program to make Sierra Leone food self-sufficient. Bio's re-election in the June 24 general election has been met by rejection by the main opposition All People's Congress APC party. The APC is boycotting all levels of governance because they say the government tampered with the results to ensure Bio's win. VOA's Peter Clottis sat down with President Bio ahead of the 78th UN General Assembly to talk about his vision and concerns about the elections.
What I want to do for the second term is to consolidate the gains of the past 5 years, but also my program for the second term is going to be informed by most of the challenges we've had to go through as a result of COVID-19, as a result of the crises, multiple crises that have shaped definitely the way we should do business. So I have five pillars that I've identified to support the government in our sustainable development efforts.
What are those five pillars, and specifically, what do you want to do to achieve them?
Well, one of the challenges we've had with the advent of, especially the war in Ukraine, has been food prices have gone up. And we know that we can do better by providing food for our people. We have enough arable land. We have enough rainfall. So now we need to put in place the remaining things that have to be done for us to be able to increase productivity, and not only increase productivity in agriculture, but also use it as a leverage to improve on our economy.
Mr. President, let's look at democracy in Sierra Leone. You just won election. The opposition has boycotted all form of governance. They don't even want to go to parliament. They said there has to be a dialogue to resolve their concerns because they said the elections were rigged. They are calling on the Electoral Commission to release results, but they said they are disputing your victory. What is your response to their criticisms?
The authority mandated by our constitution is the National Electoral Commission that declares the election victory. Mm-hmm. That has always been the case. And they are asking for a different thing today. They believe that the international community should come and declare who has won the election. The election was conducted in a free, fair, and transparent manner. But elections everywhere have never been without disputes. These are highly contentious issues everywhere in the world, including in the United States here. So if we have any problem, we all know that the courts are the best place to go. They have refused to go to the court because they don't have no locus. They don't have anything to present to the courts. Why are they coming, going elsewhere and talking? Go to the courts. That was what I did when they said I lost the election. They rigged the 2012 election. Counting was still ongoing when they declared the election. And when we asked them, they said, go to the police. We have not rigged the election. I was declared the winner. And we were expecting that They are living in a rules-based society like ours, where the rule of law is definitely the way to go. They should have gone to the courts, but they have refused to go to the courts. Instead, they prefer to pander to other institutions around the world to come to their aid.
You talked about freedom of speech. Some of the criticisms they've leveled against you is that last year there was a protest that your government said was or appeared to be a calculated attempt to overthrow your government. They said you are using that as a pretext to clamp down on their free speech, their assembly, and they attempted to organize a protest recently, and that you sent out the military to intimidate them, threatening to arrest them. How do you respond to these criticisms, Mr. President?
The opposition said they had nothing to do with the protests. Mm. They did not want to be their name to be called in that protest. But we know that because they cannot get the people out for genuine reasons to support their own claim that they won this election, they would rather prefer to work from the back. The last protest, they called it protest. When they came out, as I've always said, anarchy, terrorism is their tactic. And they killed 5 policemen in less than a day. They looted and they were going for the seat of power. That is not protest.
Sierra Leonean President Julius Maada Bio was speaking with viewers Peter Clotier in Washington ahead of the 78th UN General Assembly in New York. We'll speak with Sierra Leone's main opposition on Wednesday show for their reaction to President Bio's interview. Rescue efforts continue in Morocco as the country grapples with the aftermath of the strongest earthquake to hit the country in the last 120 years. The earthquake wreaked havoc on areas of Marrakech and nearby communities, claiming nearly 3,000 lives. Local and international rescue efforts continue as crews race against time to provide aid to hardest hit villages and mountainous areas. Yasmin El Bagari is a Moroccan entrepreneur living in the United States. She rushed back home to help in the aid effort, working with the World Central Kitchen to provide warm meals to people whose homes were destroyed. From Marrakech, Yasmin spoke to viewers Jackson Vunganyi about the rescue efforts and the impact that the earthquake has had on other aspects of Moroccan life.
The response so far has been amazing. First of all, by the Moroccan government. I mean, they were the first to be responding. They are providing all kinds of support from tents to food, basic needs. They're even relocating the children that have been affected into Marrakech to go to school so that they can continue their education. We're also seeing a lot of international organizations such as the World Central Kitchen that I have actually been working with closely, mm-hmm. providing over 120,000 meals. So we started off with 1,000 meals a day, and now we're ramping up into 50,000 meals per day. And we're really talking about sandwiches, but also hot food, just to provide a sense of dignity. And so the operation has been amazing. There are so many people and Moroccans here on the ground that are helping, volunteering, and really showing up like never before. And it's amazing to see the solidarity that is coming from the international world and Morocco itself.
How did the earthquake affect other aspects of life in Morocco? I'm thinking of, cultural and historical landmarks that have been part of the heritage of this country for thousands of years.
Yeah, great question. Morocco is such a beautiful country, and we do encourage everyone to still come to Morocco. Morocco's economy very much depends on tourism. And so we don't want people to not come. Still, everything is operating as normal in Marrakech. The villages that have been impacted are more in the Atlas Mountains. But yeah, a lot of the monuments and historic monuments have been some of them have been destroyed. The homes of these villages are completely down to dirt and ground. So we will need a lot of initiatives for medium and long-term rebuilding process. I'm actively working on one as well called Rebuild Hope, which is very much focused on working with the communities to figure out what they need and giving them the power to discuss and to decide on what they need to rebuild. Instead of just bringing, here's what you need, it's really working collaboratively with the people to figure out how they want to rebuild their own communities.
And what can you tell us about the Moroccan diaspora and what are they doing to help?
I mean, it's amazing to witness the amount of support, fundraising efforts that have been going on. I'm in touch with Morocco. I'm one of the Moroccans from the diaspora. I'm in touch with the whole, some of the community members in New York, in Europe, all over the world that are just wanting to help. And so there has been so many different initiatives, fundraising efforts to be able to support the local nonprofits like ML, like Jude, that are actively working on the ground and helping to support these impacted communities.
Yasmi El Bagari is a Moroccan entrepreneur living in the United States. She spoke with VOA's Jackson Bunganyi from Marrakech, where she is working with the World Central Kitchen to provide warm meals to Moroccans affected by the earthquake. Italy's government on Monday passed measures to build new migrant detention centers and allow for the rapid deportation of failed asylum seekers. Italy is facing another surge in migrant arrivals on the small island of Lampedusa. More than 2,000 people have died on the treacherous crossing between North Africa and Europe this year alone, according to the United Nations. Henry Richwell reports from London.
In the past week, almost 10,000 migrants have landed on the tiny Italian island of Lampedusa. Most have crossed the Mediterranean on small boats from Tunisia.
We sleep in the open air, in the sun and in the cold. There is no food and there are children.
The European Commission President joined Italy's Prime Minister on a visit to Lampedusa Sunday and promised a tough response.
We will decide who comes to the European Union and under what circumstances, and not the smugglers and traffickers.
Von der Leyen outlined a 10-point plan, including a bigger role for the bloc's border agency, Frontex, in identifying and repatriating migrants who don't qualify for asylum.
When it comes to substantive points and contents of things that the Commission can do, or the European Union even can do about this problem, there is absolutely nothing new.
Italy's Prime Minister pledged to build more detention centres and said the migrants must be stopped at source.
With a European mission, including a naval one if necessary, in agreement with the North African authorities to stop the departure of the boats. Assess in Africa who is or is not entitled to asylum and accept in Europe only those who actually have the right, according to international conventions.
The European Union signed a strategic partnership with Tunisia in July, worth $1.1 billion, in return for a crackdown on human traffickers and tightened border controls. Human rights groups have expressed concerns over Tunisia's treatment of refugees and say Europe must offer a more humane response.
You don't stop them by putting up walls. You don't stop them by closing borders or with naval blockades. Welcoming them is the best answer you can give.
EU member states are struggling to agree on a new migration pact. Several Eastern European countries are refusing to accept refugee quotas to share the burden of the frontline states like Italy.
If we don't agree on something beyond that, then we will basically damage our own project. And that's going to be, in my view, particularly visible after the elections in 2024.
With those European elections scheduled for June, analysts say right-wing populist parties are looking to capitalize on voter discontent over Europe's handling of migration. Henry Ridgewell, VOA News, London.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Tuesday, September 19. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The East African Community Secretariat has announced that citizens of the Democratic Republic of Congo will not be charged visa fees while traveling to Tanzania and Kenya. This comes 1 year after the DRC joined the community. Moses Javier Rimana reports.
Free movement of goods and people is required under the East African Community Common Market Protocol, allowing citizens to move freely within the member states without visas. The Chief Executive Officer of the East African Business Council, John Bosco Kalisa, says removing visa charges for Democratic Republic of Congo will boost regional trade.
It's important that we welcome them in terms of facilitating the movement of persons, facilitating the movement of goods, and that will boost the EAC intra-regional trade as well as investment, but also facilitate cross-border trade, especially small trade that is happening between different borders with DRC. That is the spirit of the integration agenda.
Last week, the DRC Migration Directorate waived visa charges for Kenyan citizens who travel to Democratic Republic of Congo, a few days after the same decision was made for Tanzanian citizens. Dorothy Masirika is a regional lawmaker from Democratic Republic of Congo. She says the free movement will promote peace and stability in the Eastern DRC, a region that has faced instability for decades.
It is a big relief for the Congolese in general, and in particular those from Eastern DRC who have been carrying out a trade with the two states from a long time. With this free movement of people and goods will essentially contribute to the return of peace to the east of our country.
The Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo has been for years a battleground of armed groups, especially the M23 rebels fighting government forces. Many Congolese think an open market to East Africa will be an opportunity to boost the trade and relations with the neighboring countries. Moba Innocent is a truck driver who uses the Central Corridor route, importing goods from Tanzania to DRC. He says the visa charges used to be an issue for them as truck drivers, as it used to cost them a lot. He says that now the cost of transport will be lower as they will not need to pay for visa charges. The removal of visa charges means that small-scale traders in DRC will no longer need to pay $50 while crossing the borders. However, some business analysts say infrastructure problem in DRC, mainly roads, remain a challenge for the country to fully benefit the region's common market. Moses Aviarimana for Voice of America.
Sudanese activists have condemned the military and the paramilitary rapid support forces for attacking essential installations in Khartoum over the weekend. They say the warring parties should not target institutions that belong to the Sudanese people, and again pleaded with both sides to end the conflict in Sudan. Michael Atik reports for VOA from Juba.
Clashes between the Sudan Armed Forces and the paramilitary rapid support forces continued in Khartoum over the weekend, with the sound of rockets and artillery in various parts of the capital. Eyewitnesses near the military headquarters reported hearing powerful explosions and observed smoke blowing into the sky on Sunday. Huge fires engulfed vital government buildings, including the Ministry of Justice, the Taxation Office, the Bureau of Standards, and the Nile Petroleum Company, which are located in the heart of Khartoum. Omdurman resident Al-Sanusi Ahmed condemned the attack, saying attacking any public institutions is a crime. Ahmed told VOA via a messaging application that the recent attacks on other public buildings in Khartoum will lead to a deterioration of service delivery in the capital.
For more than 5 months of fighting, we remained in Khartoum, but now we are thinking of leaving due to deterioration of healthy and livelihoods, besides lack of electricity and water, and yet there is no government in place to maintain this.
Sudanese journalist Issa Dafalla, who fled violence from South Darfur state to Uganda a month ago, also condemned both the army and the RSF for attacking the public buildings. Dafalla told VOA continued destruction of public institutions and essential buildings could cause Sudan a lot of economic loss.
This is a big economic loss for the country, and due to this senseless war, both warring parties continued to attack hospitals, houses of civilians, and now they have included other essential government institutions.
Sudanese rights activist Salwa Said accuses former officials of the government of ousted President Omar al-Bashir of destroying what they built over the past 30 years.
They do not care if they continue to destroy Sudan and its people, but their main objective is to return back to rule this country through any means.
VOA contacted Sudan Armed Forces spokesman, Brigadier General Nabil Abdullah, for comment on this story, but he did not respond to request. Speaking to VOA, Izzat Yusuf, the political advisor to the RSF commander, distanced the RSF from bombing public institutions, adding that his group does not own any warplanes.
Bombing houses, ministries, and now companies have involved the use of airstrikes. The RSF doesn't own any plane, and this is well known to everybody.
The United Nations reports that about 5.25 million people have had to leave their homes and flee to other locations within Sudan or in neighboring countries. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
An apostolic church in southern Malawi has been closed after its leaders refused its members to allow their children to receive polio vaccines in a campaign that the Malawi government launched last week for children under 15 years age. The traditional authority of Mulanje district says she acted because the impact of polio virus on unvaccinated children.
Aida Deleza, also known as Senior Chief Chikumbu, told VOA that she ordered the church closed following several warnings she gave the church leaders against preventing children from receiving vaccinations.
In fact, during the first phase, they did it. Then we questioned them and they said, no, we are not doing that. The second phase, they did it again. So this time around, I said, no, I'm fed up. You have to leave.
Chikumbu instructed all members of the closed church to bring their children to her home for vaccination.
They were vaccinated here at my home. I told the hospital people to come and vaccinate them here. I don't know to have the country or my area full of disabled children just because we did it deliberately.
Chief Chikumbu, who heads 147 villages in the Mulanje district south of Malawi, says she also warned the village chiefs in her area against accommodating any group that denies children access to vaccinations or medication. They risk being suspended from the chieftaincy if they do. Malawi launched a mass second round vaccination campaign for children under 15 years of age last week after 5 cases were reported this year. VOA was not able to contact leaders of the closed church. Chikumbu said Monday they had left her area to settle somewhere. However, a member of the church who asked not to be named for fear of reprisal told VOA that she believed that the healing power comes from God alone, and that's why even medical workers die. Maziko Matemba is an executive director for the Non-Governmental Health and Rights Education Program in Malawi.
They can have their own opinion about things, but it's important to reflect, especially looking at polio, which evidence we have that is a deadly condition, hence this campaign.
Matemba said it is important for people in Malawi to practice their rights and freedoms with responsibilities and avoid infringing the rights of others, like children. For VOA Africa, I am Lamek Masina in Blanta, Malawi.
And that's it for this Tuesday, September 19th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your morning with us. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Barton in Washington, wishing that you will have an amazing Tuesday.